Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, February 4th, 2023, front page. Baby steps will result in new Interstate 14 eventually, by Mella McEwen. As the young U.S. was expanding across the continent, the advice was, go west, young man, to those seeking their fortunes. In the Permian Basin today, however, officials see go east as the path to increased economic prosperity, and that path is named Interstate 14 and a new western leg to the original I-14 designation that would improve connectivity out of the basin. It was contained in an amendment from Senator Ted Cruz, Republican Texas, and Senator Raphael Warnock, Democrat Georgia. Interstate 14 will ultimately span five states, and with the desired western leg, lead from the West Texas metropolitan areas of Midland, Odessa, and San Angelo, east to the port of Savannah, Georgia, the nation's third largest port system. But it will take time to develop I-14, with Steve Linhart, Project Development Manager with the Texas Department of Transportation, estimating it will take a decade to plan, design, and construct the system. The planning stage alone isn't expected to be complete until next February, he said. Planning will include participation by the state of Texas, TxDOT, the communities along the route, and will incorporate emerging technologies for electric vehicles, connected and automatic vehicles, and smart signage. The good news is what they plan, they build, commented James Beecham, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, which hosted a planning lunch on the interstate Friday at the Petroleum Museum. According to Linhart, over the next decade, there will be $4 billion in construction activity along the route I-14 is expected to take. Approximately 260 projects along the way are expected to include 32 bridges, 2 interchanges, 89 miles of added capacity, 136 miles rehabilitated or maintained, and 66 miles of new location. Caroline Mays, Director of Planning and Modal Programs at TxDOT, said her agency works on implementing these projects a mile at a time. Sometimes it's a half mile at a time, but we get it done. It was pointed out that those incremental improvements bring positive changes for residents. Expanding a two-lane highway to a four-lane divided highway reduces head-on crashes by 40%, for example. Lorena Echeverria de Misi, corridor branch manager with TxDOT, told those in attendance that this is the first time in her career to see three interstate designations, I-14, I-69, and the Ports to Plains Corridor, which is expected to be ultimately designated Interstate 27. Those interstates will open state, national, and global markets via Texas ports and border crossings and will support key economic sectors, she said. Agriculture has $25 billion in yearly sales. Texas energy comprises 41% of U.S. oil production and paid $15.8 billion to the state in 2021. Timber and lumber, international and international maritime, and national defense are all also key economic sectors that will benefit from greater connectivity to new markets via I-14. Developing I-14 from the western leg at Midland, Odessa, through to the port of Savannah is a long road, said Mays. We're laying the foundation and ensuring that with the bricks we lay today, people will continue to stack bricks on top, she said. MISD leaders set February 13th and 14th as makeup days, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD students will attend school on February 13th and 14th after board members changed the 2022-23 school calendar. Recent wintry weather required Midland ISD to cancel 3 days of school this week. Still, school districts are required to meet a certain number of days to fulfill a state mandate requirement that goes back to the 2021 legislative session. Waivers can be applied, but Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard said the district still must use two bad weather days. After the board's action on Thursday, February 13th and 14th will be those days. The Midland ISD are using 2 days during a planned intersession week, Howard said. Intersession will take place February 15th through the 17th. She said there were teachers who wanted as many days as possible, as intercession pay is an addition to a teacher's salary. The February bad weather days were the number one choice of those who voted online. Midland ISD personnel stated more than 20,000 responses came in, and the February 13th and 14th received around 45% of the vote. The next highest percentage was for May 30th and 31st, around 34%. Those sets of days were followed by April 7th, May 30th, around 11%, and then February 13th and April 7th, around 10%. School officials said April 7th, previously set as a bad weather day, will become a holiday for students and staff. April 7th is Good Friday. Howard said families who have made plans to be away on February 13th and 14th can still do so, and employees can take leave on those days in accordance to district time off policies. Commentary. We Need Midland at Her Best, by Darren Wood, First Baptist Church. Not long ago, I was privileged to speak at the annual Crime Stoppers Banquet, honoring our law enforcement officers of the year. I've rarely felt more inadequate for the task. How does one honor those who put themselves on the line each and every day? Although I do public speaking each week, this isn't the kind of talk I'm accustomed to doing, and I struggled with what to say. And then I had a thought. These men and women represent the best of Midland. Sometimes the best can be hard to find because it doesn't necessarily look like you expect. In the fall of 2009, I was pastor of a church in Jacksonville, which is about 20 miles north of Tyler. One of my deacons was the 8th grade basketball coach for one of our middle schools. He knew I had experience as a basketball coach, so he invited me to sit the bench with him for an upcoming road game. I agreed, and we went to White House, our nearest and fiercest rival. As we played, there was a kid dominating the floor on both ends, a frizzy-headed 8th grader. He was everywhere, scoring defense, transition, dribbling around us to fast breaks. He was all over the place, beating us almost single-handedly. We called a double-team defense trying to slow him down. Didn't matter at all. We called for a double-team with another defender playing over the top. Didn't matter. Finally, in a timeout, I called for a reverse box and won. One man guard the lane, the other four stopped that kid. Didn't matter. No one had ever heard of him then. But those who watched him grow up knew this was no normal eighth grader. Mercifully, the clock ran out. We shook his hand and went home, consoling ourselves that we had played hard and done our best even if we lost. Later, we took greater comfort in knowing that frizzy-headed kid beating the hound out of us was a young Patrick Mahomes. If we had known then what we know now, we would have taken more time and pleasure in the beating. We didn't expect to see a Super Bowl champion that night and couldn't see far enough to see everything ahead. But we certainly saw enough to say there's something special ahead. Seeing the best would take time and practice, just like it would for seeing the best in Midland. Midland is at her best when she believes the best about each other. When we believe the worst about each other, we will always find ourselves right. Wrongs will be nursed and grudges encouraged. Angry words lead to more angry words. But bitterness will not solve our problems, neither will it free us from the burden of others' wrongs done to us. Bitterness is like drinking deadly poison and waiting for the other person to die. When we believe the best about each other, we'll get disappointed from time to time, but we'll also find that we're right to believe the best. Midland is at her best when she is serving others instead of seeking to be served. A few weeks ago, we all remember the boil water notice and the hassle that it was. When I got the notice on my phone, I groaned aloud. What a bummer. All I could think of is how this would be a problem for me and my family. Then I thought about my friends and partners in Nairobi, Kenya. They are always under a boil water notice. This is the norm for them. So maybe, just maybe, I can make it a day or two until things get fixed. What I didn't count on, however, was what happened next. It was late Thursday afternoon, nearly going home time. My phone rang, and it was Mayor Lori Blong. Darren, can we use your church as a bottled water distribution point tomorrow? And can you find us 20 or so volunteers to serve the water too? Absolutely, I said, without a clue of how I was going to do it. One email led to another, one phone call led to another, and before I knew it, we had lots of volunteers ready to roll. Friday came, and so did the line of people eager to receive the bottles of water. And so did our volunteers. I had hoped for 10 of the ones who had volunteered to actually arrive. I was wrong by a lot. When the food bank arrived with the water, and hats off to Libby Campbell and the food bank staff, about 20 volunteers from my church showed up, and then 6 from Midland High School, and then 4 from United Grocery Stores, and then some from Midland Fire Department, and then City Councilwoman Robin Poole, and then Mayor Payton. It was exciting to see. We had way too many volunteers, even with the line of cars that circled our parking lot. Poole told us there was a need for volunteers over at the MLK Center. I took 6 to 8 volunteers and headed over. When we got close, we couldn't get there. The line stretched down Golf Course Road almost all the way to La Mesa Road. We found our way through and got started serving. In the short looks around, I saw friends serving. A Midland Country Club golf pro, Midland PD and fire, City Councilman John Norman. Friends from True Light Church, First Methodist, Greater Ideal, and Stonegate. Friends from the Mormon Church. The cars that rolled past us were of every variety and shape. Nice new cars, some still with dealer tags. Some rattle traps. I wasn't quite sure how they got there or how they were going to get home. And lots of in-between. The one thing that was common among all of it was service. There were a few complaints about the length of the line, only getting one case of water, or some such thing. But for the most part, people were happy to serve and to be served. We realized we were all in this together, and if we were going to find a way through, we would have to do so together. And Midland was at her best. Midland is at her best when she speaks well of other Midlanders. The most powerful organ in your body is the tongue. With it, you can break a bone or heal a heart. When we recognize this about ourselves, we know where to start to change things. Over a century ago, the Times of London is said to have posed this question to several prominent authors. What's wrong with the world today? The well-known author G.K. Chesterton reportedly responded with a one-sentence essay, "Dear Sir, I am. Yours, G.K. Chesterton." And there it is, honesty. I am the problem. My own frailty is the biggest hurdle I have to overcome. And it must begin with my speech. Thus, if I am to speak well of other Midlanders, I need not wait until they speak well of me. Criticism is the easy currency of the small-minded. It is much easier to criticize than to build. Building takes time, energy, vision, and patience. But criticism has so much patience for things. It's much easier to throw stones. That requires no effort at all. Speaking well of others invites me to look beyond what's obvious and see something more. Why don't we do that more often? Doing so takes time. One of my favorite hobbies is Lego modeling. With Lego, you must build from the inside out and from the bottom side up. If you judge it by how it looks based on the halfway point, you won't have seen it at its best. Don't run it down before it's complete. Give it the benefit of the doubt. If that's true for Lego, why wouldn't we expect anything else for people? Offer kindness and encouragement instead of complaint and harsh words. Offer a hand of friendship instead of demanding they move first. When I do, I might just be surprised at what I find. It might just be a Super Bowl champion quarterback as an eighth grader. I love Midland, and I know you do too. Let's take these elements and keep walking together to find Midland at her best. Community Roundup by Stuart Doreen. Concrete paving on West Louisiana Avenue. On Monday, the City of Midland Transportation Division will begin paving West Louisiana Avenue from Mogford Street to North Garfield Street with concrete. Weather delayed the start 1 week. A temporary roadway will be kept accessible during the construction. The first phase of the project will be West Louisiana between Mogford and Kent Street. This is tentatively expected to take between 4 to 6 weeks. During phase one, the post office at 2315 West Louisiana will be accessible from the north from Kansas Avenue down Mogford. The second phase will be West Louisiana between Kent and Garfield. City of Midland Job Fair. The City of Midland Utilities Department will host a job fair from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday at the Water Plant, 500 North Midland Drive. On-the-spot interviews and offers will be made for qualified applicants for the following positions for full-time and shift work. Utility Plant Operator, Water Reclamation Facility. Water Plant Treatment Technician, Water Purification Plant. Equipment Operator, Water and Wastewater Maintenance. Electronic Tech. Chief Operator, Water Reclamation Facility. Maintenance Tech, Water Purification Plant. Most positions require a GED or high school diploma. The City of Midland offers competitive pay, room for growth, and an excellent benefits package. Potential applicants can apply online at www.midlandtexas.gov. Calendar. Desert Paw Obedience Club Agility Show, February 11th and 12th, Horseshoe Livestock Building. Annual Prayer Breakfast, 7 to 8:25 a.m., February 16th, Bush Convention Center. West Texas Kennel Club, February 16th through 18th, Horseshoe Pavilion. From Disability to Possibility, The Power of Inclusive Classrooms, presented by Bynum School, February 17th, Bynum School. Wild Wild West Casino Night benefiting Oil Patch Kids, February 24th, Bush Convention Center. Online, www.betterrunite.com/OilPatchKids-WildWildWestCasinoNight. Upcoming meetings. Midland Development Corporation, 10 a.m. Monday, Midland Chamber of Commerce Boardroom, 303 West Wall Street, Suite 200. Planning and Zoning, 3:30 p.m. Monday, Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland ISD, Long Range Planning Committee, 6 p.m. Thursday, Legacy High School Library. MISD says Frank's student population grows 54% since 2019, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD board members heard that a new Northeast elementary school would basically be at capacity when opened. Board members heard that General Tommy Franks Elementary operates with a current enrollment of around 818 students. Midland ISD staff also stated enrollment could increase to 1,595 by 2032. Midland ISD had reported that the student population at Franks was 529 as recently as September 2019. Significant growth is how the increased development in the State Highway 349 corridor was described. The corridor is basically the area east of State Highway 349 and north of the Loop 250. Children there attended Franks, which is located in East Midland. What was talked about during Thursday's special board meeting was building a new elementary school with a floor plan that is similar to Yarborough Elementary in West Midland. The enrollment would be around 900. Board President Brian Murray said board members would have to consider building a bigger elementary than for 900 students. With the current houses and planning additions, it would be wise to think bigger, Murray wrote in a text to the Reporter-Telegram. Board members heard building a 900-seat school on a nearly 13-acre site in Northeast Midland would cost around $40 million. They heard that General Tommy Franks, one of the top-performing campuses in the district, operates at a 115% capacity, including four portable classrooms that have been added to the campus. The functional capacity is still at around 103%, MISD staff said. School board members continued the discussion that building a Northeast Elementary School would allow the current Franks campus to become a neighborhood school. Midland ISD staff stated students currently zoned for Dezavala Elementary and living near Milam and Peace Elementaries could also be potential students for a future neighborhood school in East Midland. A Northeast Elementary School was identified as a top three recommended project, according to the Long Range Planning Committee. Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard stated that at this point, any plans for a Northeast Elementary School would be turned over to the Planning Committee that could offer recommendations about a future bond. An expanded version of that committee will begin meeting at 6 p.m. on February 9th at Legacy High School. AAA says gas prices drop across West Texas, by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices fell in Midland and around the state during a week plagued by a winter storm, according to AAA Texas. The organization showed Texas's average dropped by 1 cent to $3.12, and Midland's average fell 3 cents to $3.25. In fact, prices dropped across the region, including 8 cents in El Paso, 6 cents in both San Angelo and Abilene, and 5 cents in both Lubbock and Odessa. AAA Texas stated in its weekly report that fuel supplies remain decent and crude oil prices have fallen slightly, even with the higher national demand from a week ago. Fewer drivers on the roads due to winter storms has also helped slow price increases at the pump. Although Midland and Odessa saw price decreases from a week ago, they are still two of the highest gas price averages in the state. El Paso, $3.31. Midland, $3.25. Odessa, $3.20. Texarkana, $3.19. And College Station Bryan, $3.15, are the five highest statewide. 2 weeks ago, Midland's average gas price was $3.15, which was 13 cents lower than Odessa. Last week, the gap between the cities changed, as Midland's average sat at $3.28 compared to Odessa's $3.25. This week's Odessa's average is 5 cents lower than Midland's. Other averages across the state includes $3.04 in Lubbock, $3.07 in San Angelo, and $3.14 in Abilene. The cheapest average in Texas's largest 27 markets was $3.02 in Corpus Christi. AAA Texas also reported the Lone Star State remains home to the lowest state gas price average nationwide. Rig count falls in Permian and Texas, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity sank as both crude oil and natural gas prices continued their retreat from last year's highs. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count, it has issued weekly since the 1940s, plunged 12 rigs, the most since June 2020, to 759 rigs, the lowest since September. Still, the count is 146 rigs, or 24%, higher than the 613 rigs at work last year. The number of rigs drilling for oil fell by 10 rigs to 599, the lowest level since September, but still 102 more than 497 seeking crude a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dropped by 2 to 158, 42 more than the 116 last year. Texas lost 3 rigs to 377 drilling in the state, still 90 more than the 287 at work the previous year. New Mexico remained unchanged at 105 rigs, Alaska, 1. California, 2. Colorado, 1. Louisiana, 1. Utah, 1. And Wyoming, 3. Join Texas as producing states to see declines for the week. No state saw an increase. The Permian Basin also fell by 3 rigs to 354, 60 more than the 294 at work throughout the region last year. The Granite Wash Basin was also down by 1 rig. All others were unchanged. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active in the Permian with 65 rigs, down 2 for the week. Martin County was next with 41 rigs, up 1. Eddy County, New Mexico reported 38 rigs, up 2, and Reeves County had 33 rigs for a second week. Loving County was unchanged at 30 rigs, while Midland County saw its fourth weekly decline, down 1 rig to 26. Howard County had 24 rigs, up 1. Upton County dropped 1 rig to 17, and Ward County fell 2 rigs to 12. Gaines County saw no drilling activity for the week, losing its 2 rigs. Enverus Foundations, part of the energy-dedicated software-as-a-service platform Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 867 during the week ended February 1st, falling by 5 from the previous week. The count is down 1% compared with a month ago and up 18% year over year. In the last week, the Permian count increased by 9 rigs to 349, while the DJ Basin added 2 rigs each at 22. The Williston Basin and Appalachia were both flat at 42 and 53 rigs, respectively. The Anadarko Basin dropped 4 rigs to 73, and the Gulf Coast dropped 8 rigs to 112. Crude tumbles on concerns of more Fed tightening by Mella McEwen. Rising crude oil supplies drowned out optimism that the strong U.S. labor market would continue to support demand, sending prices tumbling. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose only 1 of 5 trading days, a 97-cent gain. Tuesday, that was wiped out by a $2.46 tumble the next day. Prices fell an additional $2.49 Friday to send prices to $73.39, the lowest since the start of the year, and down from $79.68 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $69.87, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices on the NYMEX likewise fell 4 of 5 trading days, starting the week with a 17.2-cent drop that sent Henry's Hub below $3 per MCF. Prices lost an additional 22 cents Wednesday and about 15 cents Friday as prices closed the week at $2.41 per MCF, down from $3.11 at last Friday's close. The recent frigid temperatures that hit West Texas much of this week fueled a recovery in prices at the Waha header in Pecos County. Takeaway constraints have sent Waha prices tumbling, sometimes into negative territory in recent months, including mid-January, when it was negative $3 for several days. The cold weather apparently curtailed some supplies, boosting prices at Waha to about $3 per MCF midweek. Relative Waha strength this week was weather-driven, knocking supply in the Permian, therefore also providing a short-term boost to in-basin prices. Rob Wilson, vice president, product of East Daily Analytics, told the Reporter Telegram by email. The boost is very short term, and we should see Waha pressured again as supply comes back online, if weather did indeed play a role, he continued. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, the Americas at Oanada, noted oil prices started Friday off with a rally as the U.S. Labor Department reported employers created a net 517,000 jobs in January, well above the 185,000 economists had expected, and a sharp acceleration from the 260,000 created in December. The Institute for Supply Management also reported that the service sector had returned to growth mode in January, he added. Recession doubts quickly vanished as this economy was showing signs it will not break, Moya wrote in his daily e-newsletter. However, he wrote, the price rally did not last as some traders thought a strong labor market will complicate what the Federal Reserve does and keep the risk of much more aggressive tightening on the table. The short-term crude demand outlook should be looking a bit healthier, so this weakness might not last much longer, Moya concluded. Global benchmark Brent crude does not belong below the $80 level, as the global economic outlook looks like it will be okay for the rest of the quarter. And now here are the obituaries published in the Midland Reporter Telegram Saturday, February 4th. Clyde Curtis Brown. Clyde Curtis Brown, 87 years of age, of Midland, died January 31st in Midland. Memorial services will be held at 1:30 p.m. Monday, February 6th, at Faith Tabernacle Church, located at 1420 East 42nd Street in Odessa, with Jeanette Fisher of Faith Tabernacle officiating. Message will be brought by Dana Crane. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Clyde was born in Villers-Platte in Evangeline Parish, Louisiana, to Clyde P. and Elma V. Brown on March 21st, 1935. Clyde is preceded in death by his mother, Elma V. Brown, and sister, Elmarine B. Berry. Clyde is survived by wife, Dora Brown, and son, Roy C. Gerhardt, and wife, Joni. Son, Philip Brown, and wife, Gianna. Daughter, Linda Brown, Easton, and husband, Nick. Clyde's grandchildren, Casey Gert, Randy Gert, Luke Brown, Perry Brown, and Claire Brown, Hannah Martin, Tristan Mulry, along with six great-grandchildren. Memorial gifts may be given to Faith Tabernacle Church, 1420 East 42nd Street, Odessa, Texas, 79762. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Joe Angel Anki Mendoza. Joe Angel Anki Mendoza, 68, of Midland, passed away peacefully on January 29th. He was born January 8th, 1955, in Midland, to Angel and Elena P. Mendoza. Joe is survived by his wife, Tavita Mendoza, daughter, Joanna Torres, son, Joe Luis Mendoza, son, Joe Angel Mendoza, Jr., daughter, Angelina Nino, and husband, Jesse, son, Tommy Mendoza, and wife, Elizabeth, all of Midland, grandchildren, Destiny Mendoza, Brianna Mendoza, Guillen, Marissa Mendoza, Jesse Brandon Nino III, Bella Nino, Jr., Tommy Mendoza Jr., Aubrey Mendoza, plus great-grandchildren. He's also survived by his brother Jerry Mendoza, sisters Mary Ann Bustillos, Belinda Portillo, and Sylvia Mendoza, all of Midland. He is preceded in death by his parents Angel and Elena P. Mendoza, brother Luis Mendoza, son Edward Mendoza. Viewing will be on Tuesday, February 7th at American Heritage Funeral Home from 4 to 9 p.m. Funeral services will be Wednesday, February 8th at 12 p.m., officiated by the Reverend Abel V. Torres, with burial to follow at American Heritage, 4100 North FM 1788, Midland, 79707. Mary Jane Moore Jenkins. April 23, 1950 to December 24, 2022. Mary Jane Jenkins of Midland, Texas, age 72, passed away peacefully at home on Christmas Eve. Her many friends in Midland and her family in Houston and Durango grieve over her loss of her loving presence and joyful spirit. Mary Jane, an only child, grew up in Ocala, Florida. Her devoted parents were James Reuben Moore and Mary Alice Wise. She will forever be cherished by her many friends, including Jan and Kent Oberly of Midland, who regarded her as a member of their family, and her sisterhood of needle pointers and stitchers, as well as her family in Houston, Pat and Gail Rickey, Susan and David Reeves, Hannah and Juliana Reeves, and in Durango, Patricia Ricky and Ann DeZento, and Benjamin and Caleb Ricky Late. Her memorial service, to be presided over by Father Rick Lopez, will be at St. Nicholas's Episcopal Church, 4000 North Loop 250, West Midland, on Saturday, February 11th at 11 a.m. Patricia Denise Griffith. Patricia Denise Griffith, age 58, of Gatesville, Texas, passed away Wednesday, February 1st. Visitation will be Friday, February 10th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Scott's Funeral Home in Gatesville, Texas. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 Saturday, February 11th at Moffett Cemetery with Reverend Tim Crosby officiating. Denise was born on July 30th, 1964 in Midland, Texas. She grew up in Midland and graduated from Midland High School in 1982. Denise was preceded in death by her mother, Patricia Ann Griffith, her grandparents, Raymond and Ruby Griffith, and Henry David and Ruby Lightsey. She is survived by her father, Dennis Griffith, and his wife, Peggy, her sister and brother-in-law, Deborah and Troy Keel, and her niece, Caitlin McKenna Keel. You may sign the online guestbook at www.scottsfh.com. Shirley Ann Wallace. Shirley Ann Wallace, 78, went home to be with her Heavenly Father January 29, 2023. She was born on April 6, 1944 in Midland, Texas, to the late Clint and Darnell Wallace. Shirley was preceded in death by her parents, Clint and Darnell Wallace, and is survived by her daughter, Cheryl Hearn, and husband, Buster, and her granddaughter, Jasmine Hearn, all of Pflugerville, Texas. Sisters Verna Murray of Midland, Barbara Fulson and husband Steve of Cibolo, Texas, and brother Tommy Wallace and wife Sandra of Dallas. Receiving of family and friends for viewing will be held from Saturday, February 4th, around 1 p.m. until 8 p.m., and Sunday, February 5th, from 1 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. The funeral service will be held Monday, February 6th at 1 p.m. at the Faith Temple Church of God in Christ. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.sanchezfh.com. Death notices. Ramona Sanchez Dominguez. Ramona Sanchez Dominguez, 86, of Midland, passed away on January 31st. Viewing will be on Monday, February 6th, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Rosary will be on Monday, February 6th, at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral will be Tuesday, February 7th, at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Burial will follow at Serenity. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Samuel Roberts. Samuel Roberts of Midland died on January 30th, 2023 in Midland. A funeral will be held Thursday, February 9th at American Heritage at 1 p.m., followed by burial at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the Odessa American newspaper for Saturday, February 4th, 2022. Barber, Gerke, and others come through in murder case. Reyes not bitter about years in prison, by Kim Smith. It's not unusual. A man gets arrested for murder. He swears he's innocent, but he's convicted at trial and sentenced. He appeals, loses, and he's largely forgotten by everyone outside the world as he sits in prison. This is not that story. Yes, James Harry Reyes was sentenced to 38 years in prison for the murder of the Reverend Patrick Ryan. Yes, he lost his appeal, and yes, he did 20 years before being paroled. But Reyes and his protestations of innocence were not ignored or forgotten. And now, 40 years later, Reyes just might have a shot at being exonerated. If he is, he'll have himself to thank, along with the bishop, a prosecutor, newspaper reporters, book authors, podcasts, A&D, Odessa Police Chief Michael Gerke's kids, and ironically, a group of cops and prosecutors, some of them who weren't even born when Ryan died. James has never given up, and he just keeps on pushing and pushing and pushing, and I think that's what we see today is the result of 40 years of James not giving up on himself and on proving his innocence, said Allison Clayton, deputy director of the Innocence Project of Texas. Ryan's bloodied, bound, and battered body was found at the Sand and Sage Motel in Odessa in December 1981. The Ireland native's stolen car was found at a moose lodge in Hobbs, New Mexico, and his wallet was found at a nearby gas station. 11 months later, a drunk and stoned Reyes, 27, called Albuquerque police and confessed to having killed the 49-year-old priest with whom he had had a sexual encounter. He then recanted. An Ector County jury convicted Reyes, a 27-year-old Chama, New Mexico man, and sent him off to prison. Growing support. Reyes's conviction was affirmed in November 1984, but in December 1991, the prosecutor who represented the state during the appellate process had a change of heart. Dennis Cadre sent a letter to then-Governor Ann Richards asking for Reyes's conviction to be overturned. Cadre had time-stamped receipts, a traffic ticket, and an eyewitness who placed him in Roswell, New Mexico at the time of the slaying, and there was no physical evidence linking him to the gruesome murder. Cadre pointed out Reyes would have had to drive 120 miles an hour to get from Roswell to Odessa and back again in order to commit the murder during the right time frame. Ryan's supervisor, a bishop, came out in support of Reyes, as did members of both the New Mexico and Texas legislatures. Journalists from the Austin American-Statesman and Houston Chronicle wrote about the case. A book was published, and A&E did a segment on Reyes. His plight was also featured on numerous podcasts. It was one of those podcasts that caught the attention of OPD Chief Gerke's kids, who mentioned it to their father, said Greg Barber, the first assistant Ector County District Attorney. Gerke then asked his staff to look into the case, Barber said. In January 2022, Barber said he had received a call from OPD Captain John Sykes, who asked to sit down with him. I thought he wanted to talk about a recent case, and I asked him if I needed to bring a file. He said, "We believe someone may have been wrongfully convicted," Barber said. Sykes and others at OPD had pulled their case files and, after reviewing them, had serious doubts about Reyes' guilt, Barber said. The records. When he got back to the office, Barber said he went on a hunt for the trial transcripts. Barber, 54, and a former law enforcement officer himself, reviewed the transcripts in the police files. He then called Deputy Ector County Attorney Carmen Villalobos, 30, to review them as well. "I wanted a different abstract to look at it. I didn't tell her what I thought," Barber said. It turns out they both had developed doubts about Reyes's guilt. "From what I read, there was doubt as to whether he could have been here in Odessa during the right time frame, or even that he was even capable of this," Barber said. "Although he had an alcohol problem, there was no indication he had a violent side to him. There was no history of violent behavior. In fact, it was quite the opposite. He seemed to be a timid, quiet individual. Although he'd been arrested before, he had never resisted or assaulted an officer," Barber said. Villalobos said she read the trial transcript in one night. "I couldn't put it down," Villalobos said. "I felt confident that he did not commit this crime." Physical evidence. In the meantime, OPD went on a hunt to find out if any of the physical evidence from the case still existed, It was a long shot, given the age of the case and the fact Reyes's conviction had been upheld, Barber said. They found fingerprints. At that point, Barber reached out to Clayton, who was his mentor at Texas Tech University of Law, to ask for a meeting. The Lubbock resident sat down at OPD with Barber, Villalobos, Sergeant Scotty Smith, and fingerprint analyst Stacy Kennedy. There was no sense in being adversarial, Barber said. Justice is about finding the truth and doing what's right by the law. It's not just about convicting someone. Villalobos, who joined the Ector County District Attorney's Office straight out of law school just under 5 years ago, pointed out that hanging in their lobby is a mission statement that says just that. They also put themselves in Reyes's shoes, they said. Wouldn't they want someone to stand up for them? Throughout the entire process, Barber and Villalobos had conversations with Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan and other veteran prosecutors about the details. Studying and prosecuting cold cases isn't unusual. Studying and possibly working to exonerate someone who has already gone through the appellate process is. Alternative suspects. Clayton said three sets of fingerprints were found at the murder scene. One set was covered in blood and matched those in Ryan's car and on his wallet. She's convinced those individuals, long deceased, are responsible for Ryan's death. According to OPD, Ryan's case has been reopened as a cold case investigation. This week, Clayton asked 70th Ector County District Judge Den Wallen to hold a hearing and to issue findings of fact and conclusions of law. If he believes Reyes is innocent, he can ask the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals to reverse the conviction, Clayton said. They're under no deadline. It could be 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years. The longest I've seen them take in recent memory is 3 years, Clayton said. Barber stressed he and Villalobos are not condemning the prosecutors who presented their case to the jurors or the jurors themselves. We were not there in the courtroom, Barber said. It's difficult judging just from the transcripts how the evidence was presented, how the witnesses came across, or what the jurors' reactions were, he said. In addition, back in the early 80s, law enforcement could only compare fingerprints with known suspects, Barber said. Bright future? Under Texas law, if Reyes is exonerated, he would be entitled to a lump sum payment of $80,000 for every year he was incarcerated, she said. He'd also be entitled to $80,000 per year for the remainder of his life and $50,000 a year per year for the time he served on parole. The legislature sets funds aside specifically for the wrongful convicted, she said. Reyes, now 66, is not thinking about that. Right now, I'm concentrating on exoneration. Anything that happens thereafter, if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't, Reyes said in a phone interview from his home in Austin. My main goal is to get exonerated so I can go home to New Mexico and see my family. While in prison, he lost his father and a sister and wasn't allowed to go to their funerals as they were outside Texas. His remaining family members, multiple brothers and his brother's families. While in prison, his family was only able to make the long drive to visit him once due to work schedules and the expense. Thankfully, he said, the warden allowed them to visit on two consecutive days when only one weekly visit is normally allowed. Clayton said she believes Reyes is trying not to get too excited because he's been crushed in the past. He's had some really good pushes for exoneration in the past, like when Cadre came forward on his behalf and the Catholic diocese. The New Mexico legislature passed an entire resolution asking Texas to pardon James. All this stuff happened and nothing came of it, and so it's happened a couple of times where his hopes get really, really built up, and for good cause, because it's looking good, and then just the bottom falls out of it. Clayton said she and some law school students who have been assisting on the case will drive from Lubbock to Austin to pick up Reyes for the hearing before Wallen. It's not yet been scheduled. I want to make sure in all my cases that the judge knows my guy's name and that you know his face. That way, if you're gonna work a further injustice on him, then I hope his face haunts your dreams. It's kind of dark, but yeah, I want them to know this is a real live person with people who really do care about him, who would do anything for him. There's a lot of people watching this case, and that's the importance of the press coverage, Clayton said. Positive attitude. Reyes, who is recovering from a stroke he had in September, said he lives day by day and denies being angry about the past. There were a few problems his first few years in prison, but for the most part, his fellow inmates came to believe in his innocence, he said. Many encouraged him to never give up. He worked as a teacher's aide in prison, helping others obtain their GED. I'm a peaceful person. I get along with people. Sure, I've been mistreated, but you know, I overlook that because I can't change that person's attitude or behavior. It's up to that person to change, Rayo said. I have accepted wrongdoings and the way things happened. I'm happy at my stage of life here, so I just want to continue to live. Whenever time is up, time is up. He also doesn't spend time thinking about what could have been. For all he knows, he could have been dead by now, killed in a car accident, he said. I'm here right now, Friday, February 3rd. I'm still alive, and I'm thankful for that. I've been blessed. I have a strong faith in our Maker, however way you want to view him or call him. I call him my Great Spirit, Rayo said. As surprising as it may sound, Clayton said she's encouraged other wrongfully convicted clients with the same attitude. They just kind of have this attitude of, I'm going to choose how I react to the situation. That is one of the only things I am in control of, is my reaction. And I'm going to choose to react with kindness and grace. I will not go into bitterness or anger. I refuse that path, Clayton said. I don't know. I think it's maybe one of the ways that the wrongly convicted hold on to their humanity is by recognizing that they have a choice and that they're going to choose peace. I don't understand it, but I see James's attitude and it's shocking. Clayton also said there are actually more people who have been wrongfully convicted than most people think. According to a Johns Hopkins study, 10% of all U.S. deaths are due to medical errors made by doctors, she said. If only 1% of Texas attorneys made a mistake that land their clients in prison, that means 6,000 to 8,000 people are wrongfully convicted every year, Clayton said. Mistakes happen. There's a toxic idea that attorneys and jurors always get it right, Clayton said. Reyes's original attorneys, the late John Cliff and John Smith, were working against a legal fiction, Clayton said. The legal fiction is that people will put aside their biases and look at the facts, and that's just not true. This case is a primary example of it. They proved that James was not even in the state of Texas at the time of this murder. For the love of Pete, there was an eyewitness who said that she saw James driving in Roswell the day after the priest's murder, and they proved that he'd been thrown in jail in New Mexico, Clayton said. A juror told the Odessa American the jury convicted Reyes because of his confession and his characteristics. What characteristics were there other than the ones that were focused on at the trial, which is his Apache race and the fact that he's gay, Clayton said. That cross-examination by the prosecutor is the most disgusting thing I've ever read. It makes my blood boil, but they forced James to come out on the stand. Why do you think they do that? Because it's relevant to anything? No, because they know that that's how they're going to get their guilty verdict. Clayton had nothing but good things to say about the work the OPD and the Ector County District Attorney's Office has been doing over the past year. She's reached out to small counties in the past and not had any luck. I'll say, listen, you've got a wrongful conviction. Please help me and they'll stay off the record. You're right. Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think that guy is innocent. But on the record, we're going to stand behind every single conviction that comes out of this county, Clayton said. It's revolting. It's morally reprehensible. And it's happened to me on more than one occasion. You just want to hang up the phone and you want to throw it against the wall. She hopes Ector County is just the first of many who will attempt to right some wrongs. I really do hope that other agencies in Texas see that this is a good thing. This is healthy.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.